Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of PM Quickie Reviews. This time we're talking about Elysium. Just got back from the pre-release show. Let's go around and introduce everybody. We have John from WaterfrontComics.com.
Hello.
And then John R. Foltz from JohnRFoltz.com.
What's up?
Tonight we are, like I said, talking about Elysium. Elysium is an interesting story. It is set in the year 2154. And Matt Damon plays Max, a down-on-his-luck gentleman who used to be a carjacker, it seems, and, you know, grew up in, I guess, what seemed to be a orphanage-type thing. Didn't seem to have any parents going on. And his childhood friend, Frey, has long since left that life and has moved away and is gone. And so he's just there, released on parole from prison from jacking cars, and he is trying to just have a clean life and do the right thing. He's working in a robotics company.
Working in the old robot factory.
Yeah, he's working in the robot factory, exactly. And it's not awesome. Early on, he finds out that Frey is back in town. She has achieved her dream of becoming a nurse and doesn't really want to let him back in to her world. It seems to be she's kind of pushing him away a little bit and says essentially her life's complicated, but doesn't really get into it. So enter in the part of the story where things really hit the fan. The world is screwed up. There's energy crisis, famine, all kinds of trouble. People are living in a dirty place. Everybody's sick. And so early on, there's a breakaway society of the very wealthy that moved up to this giant space station called Elysium, which is obviously the movie gets its name from. You know what it reminded me a lot of? It reminded me a lot of some of the things you see in the anime Gundam, where you get some of those space colonies that are just floating and they tend to have that sort of circular look. Or maybe the game Zone of Enders, if anybody's seen that. It has that sort of a space colony look.
It also kind of a nod to the 2001 rotating space station.
Yeah, definitely.
Although this one is so big, it has its own atmosphere.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's huge. I mean, they don't even have to let them inside of a shield or something. They just fly right into the atmosphere.
Yeah, so the spinning creates the gravity. It's pretty ingenious,
actually. Yeah, it's very cool. So, obviously, Elysium has lots of really cool tech. And
they have all the tech.
All the tech. Yeah, exactly.
It's what happens when the 1% finally wins.
Absolutely. Yeah, there was definitely a lot of illusions to things in this. Although, I didn't ever feel like I'd never feel like I was being beaten over the head with it or being preached to.
The movie totally works on a brilliant allegorical level, but you can just treat it as a fun sci-fi action adventure if that's what you want.
Totally.
I got out of it. It was an Occupy sci-fi movie.
Right. But I think that it was done tastefully. It wasn't obnoxious.
Well, the whole planet was District 9. I mean, when I watched District 9, I was depressed for the first half of the movie, you know, because I'm like, I really felt for the people living in, or the aliens,
I guess. Well, it's the same writer and director, Neil Blomkamp.
It almost felt like he recycled the sets from District 9.
Very well could have.
District 9 was the entire Earth, but all we see of it is Los Angeles.
Right.
Which is total crap, you know.
And everybody's trying to get it onto Elysium. Everybody wants to get to Elysium. Of course, that's not the way it works. Everybody's pretty much stuck. And there's a black market of being able to get what looks like a little DNA brand encoding thing to let you be able to simulate being a citizen of Elysium. But anyway, so Max, Matt Damon's character, working at the robot factory, ends up being involved in an accident where he gets seriously irradiated. And it's actually almost comical. They pull him out afterwards, and this robot comes up. Everybody's cleared out, and this robot comes up that's obviously meant to be dealing with anything that's not safe or biohazard or irradiated. He's got a big biohazard sign on his chest. And he throws some pills at him and says, "You'll be dead in 5 days. Take these and you'll function normally until then. Thanks for your cooperation. Thanks for your work," or something like that.
What really struck me in that previous scene was the foreman telling him, "Go in there and fix this. If you're not going to do that, I'll find someone else." Yeah. So basically, the lives are worthless.
Yeah, there was very low worth for life in this movie.
Yeah, even the parole officers are robots. Even the security guards are robots. So it's almost like they automatized the earth to take care of the billions of poor, and then the rich got off and went to Elysium.
Yeah, but the rich is all taken care of by robots as well, except they're taken care of well by robots.
Yeah, the robots do what they say.
So a big part of the story is that not only the technology to make life nicer, easier, and more pleasant, but also the technology to prolong life, amazing medical technology, is available on Elysium and only on Elysium. They're very kind of bogarting it all. And so that's a big part of the story, is that somebody that Max knows from his previous life as a carjacker, as a thief. He knows this guy who actually organizes groups of people that try and zip up to Elysium, sneak past their security, and then become citizens, or at least get access to their meds. And so sometimes you just run in there, and like the early on, there's a scene where people land on Elysium, run in, and this woman and her daughter run in and get her daughter healed from some kind of serious injury, fractures all over her body. She had like canes and stuff.
She wasn't able to walk.
Yeah.
Every house has a med bay that can cure anything.
Yeah, literally anything. Yeah. Yeah.
But for this one little girl to be healed, 60 people died.
Yep. Yep.
And then they deported her.
They all wanted to be there. It didn't seem like it was it was a trade.
Oh, right? No.
They all wanted to try and go, but the only person that ever actually got anything good out of that was this one little girl. And 60 people died. Two of the ships got crashed. A bunch of the people that landed in her ship that actually survived the attempt on Elysium, I think it was, 10 of them died or something like that. It was a mess.
We should say that all of this that we're revealing isn't spoilers, because it's all basically set up.
Oh, we haven't even, yeah, and I think that we can totally avoid the one big spoiler about what it is that makes people in Elysium want Matt Damon so hard.
Yeah, imagine a perfect paradisical future where they've gotten rid of everything bad, but it only exists for the rich, as John said, the 1%, or the less than 1%.
Yeah, really. I mean, it's a tiny amount. Because the world is
seriously overpopulated.
I looked at the flying up to Elysium as kind of an analogy for the coyotes that try to sneak people across the Mexican-American border.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that it was not a mistake that a lot of the folks in the film, I mean, of course it was taking place in Los Angeles, and so that's definitely a heavy demographic there, but there was definitely a lot of Hispanic folk in the movie.
And you would assume in 150 years from now, the Hispanic population in the L.A. basin will be heavier than it is now.
Exactly.
Yes, this was the first movie that ever gave us Hispanic cyberpunks.
Yeah, which was really cool. It was really neat to have so much Spanish in the movie.
Yeah.
To have that be like a second language. It reminded me a little bit of how in Firefly, Chinese is everybody's second language.
And in Blade Runner, everything's Japanese.
Right, exactly. And so this one, it was a very cool spin on that, is that everybody was speaking Spanish to each other back and forth, this sort of Spanglish, sometimes yeah. English, sometimes Spanish. When they were having to yell something to each other or a tender moment or exclamatory, it was always Spanish. It was like that was their heart's language.
And it's not hard to spot the allegorical pinpoints. When they come onto Elysium without permission, it's like, eject these illegals. Deport them,
Yeah,
it's like the wall across the border has become 1,000 miles of empty space, yeah.
It was really interesting. So real quick, John, what was something that stood out to you?
Well, I liked the whole thing, but I took it as much more of an allegorical movie about 1% and Occupy. I may be reading a little bit more into it than I am, but that's kind of where it struck me was, how less than the 1% control all the assets and leaving a shitty world for the 99%.
Well, and seemingly unreasonably so. It doesn't really, especially in this film, there's no real reason for them to not share the technology. I mean, maybe not everybody can live on Elysium because there's not enough space, or you could make arguments for all the complicated logistics of things, but just making the med base available
absolutely.
Is very doable. They just don't want to. They're just not going to. It's like they think that everybody on Earth is just a second-class citizen. It's really awful and harsh to have them think that way. And I think it's a powerful allegory to what is often going on.
Yeah. I know John Foltz and I often discuss how, if a cure for cancer were ever to exist, it would be too expensive for the common folk to afford it.
Quite possibly.
Yeah, so, it's like perfect universal health care exists on Elysium. They can cure anything, including if your face gets blown off. They can just knit you a new face. They can change your atomic structure, literally rebuild your body. And that perfect universal health care is beyond the reach of planet Earth. So I was saying that
Reach of the people that actually need it.
Yeah,
people up in Elysium live such a leisurely lifestyle that they barely need anything.
Maybe one reason they don't want to let that tech be used on Earth is because the Earth is already radically overpopulated. So if there were a sequel to this movie, we would have to explore. Well, I don't want to give away any spoilers.
Yeah, let's not do that. So go into just a couple things that you really thought stood out to you that you liked a lot.
Well, I think that the heart of science fiction has always been allegorical. And I think this movie, as John pointed out, is very allegorical, that it points out that it's really a movie about the haves and the have-nots.
Well, science fiction has historically always been an opportunity for somebody to say something, to tell a story that never would be published by people if it was actually telling the real story about what it's actually talking about.
Yes, it would be too controversial. By setting, usually by moving the story into the future, science fiction holds up a mirror to today. And this movie does that very well in a way that might be too heavy-handed for some people who are a little more on the right or who think universal healthcare is evil.
It's definitely a little bit of a left-leaning movie for sure. But I mean, a lot of movies
I can see that. And I think that it does that very well. And it also delivers nonstop action. You know, it was very one of the positive things I wanted to say about it was that I never felt like there was a dull moment. It never dragged for me. It really moved. And also the visuals were just amazing, from the squalor of future LA and Earth to the pristine beauty of the Asimovian splendor of Elysium.
I thought it worked really well. Really awesome how they had that duality existing together, where you've got just the squalor and the trash and these shanty cities, and then above them are flying these super futuristic hovercrafts, and out of them are jumping these amazingly complicated robots that move and act and look like people. It's just crazy to see that, and it's really neat. I always enjoy that when you have that. Like, it struck a chord with me because I always like frontier westerns and things like that, you know, but like space frontier is something that I'm always drawn to. And so you got that fringe society, you know, living in the wild sort of feel, but you also get the futuristic fun stuff to be able to play with, some sci-fi, some real fantasy technology and things like that. And I think that that's something that they were able to play with this, is it being so far in the future, but there being such a giant divide between the haves and the have-nots that you could have a story that takes place in an area that's just horrible. I mean, really just years behind where we are right now as far as healthcare and comfort and cleanliness and availability of jobs and food and all that sort of stuff, and still have it be so far in the future that there's these fantastical technologies. It's very interesting.
Yeah, there were a lot of cool gadgets, which is another thing I liked. And they didn't stop the movie to tell you what these gadgets were, but when you saw them in action, you're like, oh, that was neat. Ooh, that was cool.
I love the power rig that they put on him. And, you know, it's neat.
Exoskeleton.
The exoskeleton thing, right, because it's not like some mecha thing that he jumps into, or not some kind of giant, like at the end of Aliens kind of thing, where it's this big body. It's just this little piece that, like, they drill into his bones and it increases his strength to equal of the robots that he's going to be running into. You know, it didn't even make him more powerful than them. It just leveled the playing field, which I thought was really interesting.
I love how they just cut open his brain and shove in a chip, you know?
Yeah.
Like, okay, this is all you need.
Yeah, a little Johnny Mnemonic nod there, I think, because he
definitely
ends up having William Gibson. Yeah, have some information stored in his brain, a little chip. Very, very interesting.
You're checking out Ready Player One, we talked about.
Oh, so excellent.
Couldn't you imagine how the world existed in the Elysium in L.A., being how the world was in Ready Player One, where they're talking about everything stacked on top of each other.
Everything's trash, and the only place that anybody can have any kind of nice experience, and it's beautiful, and there's grass and animals and trees, is in the fake world, you know.
Virtual reality.
Yeah, the virtual world. So, John, what's something that you thought you really didn't like very much, if you could find something?
It's a little nitpicky thing.
Okay.
But Jodie Foster plays a big role in there, and she does the worst accent I've ever heard. I have no idea what she was trying to portray.
She almost sounded like she was dubbed or something.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't even sync up with her lips at times. It was weird.
And I'm a pretty big Jodie Foster fan.
She's excellent. You
know, she's a great actress. But
she had some great lines that she was able to deliver in this one, too. She was a very fierce character.
And I didn't get her whole plan was. You know, it was this nefarious, treasony thing that she was doing, but I didn't understand exactly what.
I did get it, but I'm not going to spoil it for
them. Yeah, we'll have to talk about it after.
You can tell me after, yeah.
Yeah, suffice to say, she's kind of the military arm of Elysium, and she's kind of looking to take things over.
Darth Vader of this movie.
Yeah, and she's running into the public council and the president up there, and they're wanting to be a little more lenient with dealing with illegal aliens and stuff, but they're not wanting to do that. Or the illegals.
Sometimes a little slow on the uptake.
Yeah.
She has. It's chilling to see Jodie play an evil character. I don't think I've ever seen that. She has no respect for human life at all.
No, she's dark in this one. She's really dark. So, John Foltz, what did you think? Anything that stood out that you wish you would have been different?
Not too much. I think that one of the things that kind of strained my credibility just a bit was when they did put the exoskeleton on Max, and they had to drill into his brain. They had to put bolts all the way down his spine. You know, they had to connect his bones with a series of pneumatic drills, you know. And then he's up and he's at it the next day. He's up and he's ready to go. I would think that after going that much trauma, the body would require at least a week to rest. But at this point, Max only has 4 days left to live.
Right. So it could be willpower, but it also could be those crazy pills they have him on to keep him keep him having normal function while his organs are failing.
Yeah. And they could have shut down the part of his brain that would, you know, may have been affected. Possibly. I mean, when we're talking about technology like this, but it's interesting because this dirty technology down on the planet, it's real cyberpunk. They slap him together on a table. They're smoking a joint while they're operating on him.
It's very Johnny Mnemonic. Very Johnny Mnemonic.
Very, very much so. Neuromancer William Gibson, Johnny Mnemonic. And then the pristine med bays up in Elysium. So that was a good, there were a lot of good contrasts. And this movie's all about contrasts. So, I mean, you're asking about any negative things, though. I can't really think of anything else except for the fact that sometimes the action scenes, and there were a lot of them, sometimes they got a little confusing, and I was wanting for a little more clarity.
You know, a lot of shaky cam.
I was about to say that. That was probably one of my biggest problems with it, is that there was a lot of shaky cam. Although shaky cam makes for some powerful, visceral moments, and I almost wish that they would have dialed it back, but I don't think I would want them to totally take it out. There were some scenes that felt like it should be a little shaky, and it was kind of powerful and felt like you were really there, but especially the fight scenes. And that's really the problem with shaky cam, is when they do shaky cam in the fight scenes, and it really just robs it of its clarity. And I don't know if anybody else really cares about that as much, but I always want fight scenes to be really easy to understand and see, because I love to like pay attention to them and see how they work.
I want that too.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. I can remember the first time I saw it was probably Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon was one of the first times where they had just nice clean shots and smooth camera work on these elaborate fights. And it was like, holy shit, you can really see everything that's happening. That's awesome.
Because they were really doing
it. Yeah, exactly. I think that it's a little bit of a hiding, kind of weak fighting. But I think the thing that stood out to me that I wish would have been a little different, or maybe downplayed a little bit, was Freya's daughter, Matilda, who is ill. And obviously they're trying to get her to Elysium. And Freya, again, is Max's childhood friend, who is a nurse and comes back into his life a couple of days before he gets ill, before he gets sick from the radiation. And you know, she was an interesting character. I feel that it would have been better for her to just be a plot device instead of have to have her try and really communicate with him and sway him, because she came out and started to tell this sort of like fable to him, and he cut her off in the middle of it and ran off and got into another fight scene. And you know, it's just kind of like, I could have done without all that. Fine, have her there, have the connection with the daughter, and have her be sick and have that pull on Max's heartstrings because of his connection with Freya. But the daughter didn't need those lines. The daughter didn't need to try and make a connection with Max. And I don't know, maybe I'm being a little harsh on that, but that just felt a little forced when they're in the middle of this, like he's running away and there's terrible things happening. People are coming after him. And she's like, let me tell you about the story of the fox and the rhino. And well, it's like, know, what?
It's such a grim movie. They had to put a little cuteness in there.
You know? Not necessary, in my opinion.
I was waiting for the Hollywood reveal of that was Max's daughter.
And I'm so glad that they didn't do that.
So glad they didn't.
They didn't do a lot of that stuff. They actually made some pretty good hard decisions.
Yes, they gave me the ending that I wanted.
Yeah,
it wasn't fairy tale.
Yeah, they didn't do that. What did you say? They didn't give us the PG-13 version,
right?
Which makes sense because this is an R-rated movie. But it's nice that they don't. It's a great movie and an awesome finale. And not everything works out for every person. It's nice when it doesn't happen that way. It feels a little more real and believable, and it leaves a mark. You know, I think it stays with us better.
It's because we're three cynics.
That's true. So, John Harder, what do you think about rating out of 5?
Solid 3.75 to 4. It was a really fun movie. I'm glad that we went and saw it. But I can wait to rewatch it till it comes out on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm. John Foltz?
I'd give it a 4. For originality, for vision, I felt like it was the logical extension of what Neil did from District 9. This was his first big budget movie. He expanded it. Like I said, the analogy in my mind is District 9 is now the entire Earth. And he did a good job, and so I'd throw it a 4.
Yeah, I think I'll do a solid 3.5. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I liked it a lot. I think that it, you know, perhaps lost a little bit of its oomph because there wasn't enough character in it. We didn't get enough time. I mean, you said it's really nonstop, and you don't really get enough opportunity to get to know or really care about the characters. You get just a little bit.
That
flashbacks
may have been
here and
my
there.
Biggest flaw with it is that it does move so fast. It could have used a few more tender moments.
I mean, you look at the good stories of any kind that stay with you, and regardless of the environment or the situation, they get you to care about the characters, and they spend some time, which at the sacrifice of other things, because it's, you have only so much time to tell your story, but they'd spend some time getting to know the characters, and then whatever happens to the characters is more compelling the whole time, which is unfortunate that we won't get a chance to really get to know Max and Freya as well as we'd like, but still enough to care what's going on for them, just not as much as something like, one of the classics where you really, really feel deeply connected.
You make a good point, and I think it's why we had that scene with the kid, because they wanted you to care about that
kid. Yeah, they're scraping to try and have something, so. Yeah, I think, let's go around real quick. What do you think, fun factor?
I'm going to go with a fun factor of 62.
62. John Foltz.
This is a 100-point scale, right?
Okay. Yes, 100-point scale.
Fun factor? I'd have to throw it I don't know. I have to say a 90.
90. It was up there.
I think it was a lot of fun. It was an action. I mean, it was definitely an action movie. One fight after another.
Well, that's why we have the fun factor, because there's how well was it crafted, which is out of 5. And then how fun was it? Because it can be two very different things.
I had more fun than John did.
It bummed me out about the Occupy thing.
Yeah, but a little bit.
I just like to say there's no direct thing that's saying Occupy here. It's just, it's making some of the points that I think people are making in that movement or made in that movement. But are you saying that you think it was a little heavy-handed in its allegories?
Oh, I don't think that at all, but it was a lot of fun with the fights, but...
So you think it was just kind of like a downer a little bit?
Yeah, and it was designed to make you think.
That's the way I felt after District 9. I was depressed as hell, but I loved the movie, but it depressed the hell out of me.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think I'll give it maybe a good solid 70 in fun factor. It was a lot of fun, really, really good. Yeah, I'm glad we saw it, definitely. All right, so... Pretty good scores. Sounds like a good time. So maybe you guys go check it out and make a night of it. That's about it. So thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next time.
We'll see you next week for Kick Ass.
Kick Ass!